Thursday edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast here. Got a little catching up to do news-wise, and we're also going to do a little feature which Danny has been clamoring for some time because he is a big proponent of being allowed to pick your playoff opponent. And so we're going to actually do that for the top four seeds in each conference. And if not, obviously it's unrealistic, but it also gives us a good chance to kind of talk about what some of the preferred matchups might be for some of these teams. How are you doing, Danny?
Doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Really enjoyed being a panelist at the Stanford Sports Innovation Conference yesterday. That's why we didn't have a podcast then, but we will get you your fourth podcast this week. Anyway, let's start with the news. What do we got?
So this is kind of the last time that we'll really talk about the buyout part of buyout season because the deadline was March 1st. And to me, the two most notable ones that happened since the last time we recorded are Ty Lawson and Kevin Martin.
Yeah, Kevin Martin, we don't know how much money he gave back yet. And we had talked about this on a previous program. He went right down to the wire on his negotiations because he had that player option for $7 million next year. And so the kind of question was, how do you treat that? Are you going to assume, number one, that he would take that, which you probably would? I don't think he gets $7 million at this point, having barely played all year and, you know, being into nearing his mid-30s now. So, you know, for me, I would be saying, all right, maybe $4 million of that, $5 million of that is something is what I would want if I were him. You know, maybe he gets $3 million or something. I'll be very interested to see what that number is. But more interestingly, the Spurs have been considered the front runner for him. I presume that they would probably move on from Matt Bonner. He seems like the other expendable guy on the team after they release Ray McCallum to sign Andre Miller, which we'll also get to. Do you think that Kevin Martin helps the Spurs in any significant way?
No, but I mean, I don't think Bonner really does either. And the reason that you would have wanted somebody like Kevin Martin was if Manu Ginobili was going to miss extended time. And it sounds like he's closer to coming back. So he's not a bad player. It's not like you're sitting there going, oh, well, he's going to hurt you the time that he's in. It's just that the marginal value is not particularly high.
I will say he doesn't particularly strike me as a Spurs kind of player defensively. But what came to mind was what they were able to get out of Marco Bellinelli when he was there, where you've seen that Marco, when he was there, was really efficient, was shooting 40% on threes every year in the regular season. He barely played in the playoffs, you know, was really playing 5 or 10 minutes a game during their playoff runs when he was there. But I think Martin maybe could play somewhat of a similar role with just a little bit more creation off the bounce, but maybe even probably worse defensively than Marco Bellinelli was. So we'll see. I think with Manu coming back, they're probably going to try and ease him in. They don't really have anything to chase in terms of seeding because they're behind Golden State. Although if Golden State's injury problems arise, they could still conceivably catch them. And then they are so far ahead of Oklahoma City and the Clippers at this point that I don't know how much he really is needed for the regular season, but he will help. And then I would see him playing at most 5-10 minutes a game in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page with that. Do you want to talk about Andre Miller?
Yeah, another guy who I'm not really sure provides a ton. Maybe it's just sort of insurance if Parker goes down. I mean, I'm not even sure that Andre is a better player than McCallum at this point. Although, and you remember the Spurs gave up the 60th pick essentially to, or I forget what, their own second round pick last year, which was, you know, in the late 50s. To get him, I guess he didn't work out, or they felt like Andre Miller was a better player than him. I don't know that I agree with that, but that's more that because I just think Miller is pretty much about done at this point and is just, you know, such an epic record scratch guy with his inability to shoot that I think he gums up the works for everybody else.
It definitely hurts Ray McCallum because the Spurs are considered a good arbiter of talent, and they would have had match rights on him going into the summer. Whether they would have used that or not, it still would have been nice to have that on instead of them basically saying, we're going to cut you for somebody who is just a, you know, emergency replacement kind of guy.
Chris Humphries has agreed to sign with the Hawks after he was not claimed on waivers when he was bought out by the Suns. The only team that really would have wanted to claim him was the Sixers. They actually could have saved a little bit more money by claiming him than if they had saved Beno Udrych. They could have saved about $100,000 more by claiming Humphries, but they did not in fact claim either of those guys. So it looks like They are likely to finish the season below the salary floor. They may sign a few more minimum guys, but if that's prorated, or maybe they'll try and sign someone to a longer non-guaranteed deal, using some of that room that they still have left. But anyway, what do you think of Humphreys to the Hawks? We didn't see him play at all in person on Tuesday night in that game against Golden State. But I think he does, his rebounding could theoretically help fill a need for them.
Sure. He's a guy who's capable of playing NBA minutes. You know, he can, and on a team that actually matters, you know, that they're, what they do in the rest of the regular season at the very minimum is important for seeding and for lots of other things. We'll talk about them in probably some detail a little bit later on. But at the same time, he's not going to move the needle a ton for them. It's a guy who can sop up minutes if necessary. I would have said ideally it would have been nice for them to get a guy who can protect the rim a little bit better, but those players were not available. So you can't really criticize them for not getting something that was not there.
Yeah, and Humphreys at least is a reasonable defensive rebounder. They just get killed on the defensive glass all the time, and it's basically down to about a three-man front court rotation. Sometimes they'll play Walter Tavares against some bigger teams. He did not play at all against Golden State. Mike Muscala only played 2 minutes. So it was Mike Scott, Horford, and Millsap. None of those guys are really at this point in their career do a great job on the defensive glass. That's something that Humphreys can do. And with his newfound three-point shooting, even though he is basically 31 now, you know, he can kind of keep the spacing train rolling a little bit, maybe kind of give you something akin to what Pero Antic did last year as a fourth big. I think he can help them a little bit. Not a guy who is renowned for his intelligence, hasn't really played in any system like the Hawks's, so it could take him a little bit to get up to speed offensively. So I think really only 50-50 chance that he ends up being in the rotation ultimately, but if he can get up to speed on offense, I think he could help their rebounding, which has been a major, major bugaboo for them.
Toronto, the number two seed in the East, who has a chance at number one, they signed Jason Thompson, who was cut and stretched by the Warriors, and to clear space for him, they waived Anthony Bennett, recent number one overall pick.
Yeah, and Thompson, just to get to him briefly before we get to Bennett, I wondered why the Warriors didn't want to just hold on to him and, you know, waive someone like Ian Clark or McAdoo and just see if they could offload him for nothing in the offseason. And the reason for that, when I went and looked at it, is because his guarantee date is actually very early. It's like, I think it would have been like June 26th. So they would have had to decide to move on from him, and they absolutely would have. He only had $2.7 million guaranteed for next year and would have been $7 million otherwise. So at that point, there wouldn't have really been the chance to offload him unless they did it during the draft, and teams wouldn't have really had cap space to do that yet. So they basically figured, all right, we stretch that remaining $2.65 million over 3 years, and he's only, you know, a less than $1 million cap hit these next two summers when they're going to try and be active in free agency. Anthony Bennett, obviously there was talk that maybe he could resurrect his career in Toronto. That absolutely did not happen, and you have to imagine now that he is likely to just be out of the NBA and have to rebuild his career overseas, which, you know, I mean, at the age that he is, 20, I think he's like 23 right now, is certainly possible. I think he's a guy who could make an impact overseas with his ability to shoot, and his athleticism could look a little bit better there. But yeah, I mean, obviously just one of the, maybe you have to say probably the second most disappointing number one overall pick in NBA history behind Larue Martin from the Trailblazers.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely contributed less than Olukondi, who was considered one of those. But I mean, Bennett, it is true that
Olukondi at least signed a second contract for the full mid-level with Minnesota.
Yeah, and contributed. You know, he was a guy who got minutes for first stretches of time. And Bennett, I agree with you. I think he's somebody who has the talent and the skill set to do well in Europe. I also think the weird parallel, I'm not saying it will happen, but could be somebody like Jan Vesely, who has kind of changed his game a little bit, has become a good player, and could come back to the NBA. We don't know if that's going to happen, but it could. And there's still a lot of ways to make a life outside of the NBA, but it is, of course, really disappointing to see somebody who has the talent and who had the, you know, of course, the draft position that he did. But that does happen.
Yeah, I would be surprised if in our lifetimes we see another number one overall pick get his rookie option, fourth year option, declined. I mean, that is just really remarkable stuff. And then to not even be able to stick on a minimum contract. Jason Thompson, I thought that his problem was that he never really seemed to pick up the Warriors system on offense. They also didn't really have a place for him to play kind of his natural power forward position defensively, because the Warriors like to really only play one big without three-point range. And he really struggled in those two big alignments, was not able to supplant any of their other centers as well. But maybe you can say that defensively he might be able to help the Raptors a little bit. You know, he still was a great pro, stayed in really good shape, so I think he'll be ready to go. And maybe in a system that's not as complex, he can contribute a little bit, provide a little bit more defense, you know, when Luis Scola is kind of not cutting it. But ultimately, I think it's unlikely that he plays significant minutes for this team.
Yeah, he'll have a better chance with them than he did with the Warriors, but a better chance is still not great.
Danilo Gallinari sprained his ankle against the Clippers a bit back. He is expected to miss an extended period of time. They have a 7-game homestand right now that he is not going to play in at all. You could think he probably is just going to get shut down for the rest of the year. And the big winners from this really would have to be the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, because the Knicks aren't going to make the playoffs, so they get the inferior of those two picks, which doesn't really necessarily affect the Nuggets too much, because if they just fall below the Knicks, they keep their own pick. And yeah, makes what the Raptors get a lot better.
Yeah, right now the Nuggets are projected by 538 to win 33 games. You'd think that that probably is going to go down a little bit now without Gallo, because the projections don't know that. The Knicks projected to win 31 games. Denver will have the better of those two picks. Toronto the worse. And so there's some chance that both of those teams could be selecting in the top 10. And you throw those two odds together and they've got a pretty decent chance of moving into the top three. So that'll be something to monitor. And if the Raptors could get a top 10 picker, I mean, that could be something that could be fantastic to make a trade for them. If, you know, you say that they're going to get to the East Finals, and that's a top 10 pick could get you like a real good player. So that's something to watch. Beno Udrych, some interesting salary cap, luxury tax gymnastics again from the Heat. We wondered how they're going to get under the tax again with Joe Johnson. We speculated that Udrych, who is out for the season, would get waived and then possibly claimed by the Sixers. But the Sixers, I think, didn't want to do that because they have Miami's pick. There's no reason for them to give Miami additional flexibility. And so what ended up happening was Udrych just gave up $90,000 for no apparent reason to help the Heat get under the tax. And Pat Riley has had some success in getting guys to do this. And but it does also kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit.
It does, and it should. I mean, that's the type of thing, because Beno isn't, he's hurt. He's not going to play this year, so he's not going to recoup that money. You know, like Chris Humphreys left money on the table, but he signed, I think the story I heard is that he signed with Hawks for a very similar amount to what he left on the table. So you get those circumstances. Beno's out. He's not going to get that. And so you wonder, you know, why he could do that. Of course, Miami is a good team to engender goodwill with, but we'll have to see how this turns out. And I understand why. I think Brian Windhorst reported that teams were uncomfortable with this, and I completely understand why.
Yeah, I had a conversation with an executive about this yesterday, and he said, hey, if you were Adam Silver, would you investigate this? And, you know, if I were Adam Silver and I cared really about enforcing the rules, yeah, I probably would. Now, you're never going to find anything on these sorts of things, right? If I were Adam Silver and I just, you know, kind of didn't really want to attract negative publicity on something that's relatively ancillary, maybe I wouldn't. I mean, but so, you know, what's prohibited is agreeing to a contract ahead of time, right? That's sort of what has been thought of here is happening, right? That they're going to bring him back and that they have agreed on that, and that, you know, giving up the $90,000 was sort of part and parcel of a future contract agreement, which would be illegal. Now, you know, would it be illegal for Pat Riley and Andy Ellsberg, their cap guy, to say, hey, you know, we could really use a third point guard next year. We really like your game. You know, that we would be interested in signing you next summer. Does that go far enough to be circumvention? I mean, it's not a hard agreement, but it still is sort of enough. And you're never, it's whatever it is, it's going to be oral. Nobody's dumb enough to put it in writing the way they did back with the Joe Smith thing where they had a bunch of picks that got forfeited. So I think ultimately no one's ever going to find anything. There, if I had to guess, there were at least some kind of tacit discussions like what I outlined. And, you know, for 90 grand, I mean, the analogy that I made to the executive was, you know, let's say I'm a vendor, you know, I'm a copy service and I work with this law firm and we bill like $2 million a year of business. Now, we don't have any agreement that that business is going to continue. But let's say at the end of the year, because we had $2 million worth of business, just as a measure of goodwill, I knock 50 grand, 90 grand off of your bill at the end of the year, kind of thinking, all right, you know, this is a relationship we have. It's goodwill. We don't have an agreement that it's going to continue, but I just want to kind of, you know, stay in your good graces and help maintain the business relationship in a way that I know would really help you out because, you know, law firm, you're kind of running a little low on cash at the end of the year, and I happen to know that. You know, that sort of thing happens in business all the time, and I think this is kind of analogous to that.
It is, and it actually would have been harder from a circumvention standpoint for Miami if they had, let's say, done something with Udonis Haslem, somebody who could retire at the end of this year and then move into a non-team capacity, like into a non-playing capacity. I think that would have been shadier from a circumvention thing than Benno doing this because, as you said, there's a potentially continuing relationship here.
But anyway, so the Heat are now under the tax. They've got a little more flexibility, and you know, they kind of did it again. I mean, they did this with James Jones when they were starting the big three era as well. They got him to take a buyout so that they could get closer to offering all three of those guys max contracts. Let's see, what else do we have
here? Brandon Wright.
Yeah, what a lost season for him this year, huh?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately for him, he has a three-year contract, but he has an MCL sprain in his right knee. He will not need surgery, but he is out indefinitely. So the guy who was going to kind of, not replace, but, you know, fill in for Marc Gasol is now out.
Yeah, it's the big situation is getting pretty ugly for Memphis. I haven't had a chance to really watch them in great detail since Gasol has gone out, since the trade deadline. But things are looking pretty ugly for them. I mean, they are very likely to make the playoffs. You'd have to imagine, even though they did lose somehow to that Suns team in pretty remarkable fashion. But I think just they're getting to the point where they're just going to be such a non-threat in the playoffs, as we will get to when we are picking our playoff opponents, a little bit of foreshadowing. The Rockets signed a couple of players who recently completed their seasons in China. Start with Michael Beasley.
Michael Beasley and Josh Smith are now on the same team. I'm very happy.
Yeah, Beasley, you remember, actually, his numbers weren't bad with the Heat in his last year in the NBA. He was on a finals team. He shot 39% from three. I think he actually helped them offensively. He's always been a pretty miserable defensive player. It seems now with the way the league is going, I always thought that he should have played the four his entire career, and maybe that might have had things turn out a little bit differently for him, but, you know, it did not, in fact. And he doesn't really seem to me to help the Rockets much this year because their problems are on defense, but as our friend Kevin Pelton made the point that he is now under contract for next year, and that therefore, you know, this team could look a lot different. They may actually need his production next year. I don't expect him to do all that much this year, and he also provides a non-guaranteed contract to kind of make some trades with and stuff during the off season as well, if that's what they want to do. Godlock, on the other hand, I actually think that he, with the buyout of Ty Lawson, that's how they got this space under the hard cap to do this, by buying out Lawson, which we'll get to a little bit. Godlock is an excellent three-point shooter, doesn't really do much else, not much of a defender, doesn't really do a ton off the dribble, but playing next to James Harden, especially just as sort of like a late-game offensive replacement, he's probably a better shooter than Jason Terry, can get a shot a little bit better than him. And same thing with Beverly. So I kind of like the fit. I think Godlock's someone who kind of should get another NBA chance, and this is about as good of a fit as it can get, a team that wants to shoot a ton of threes and has a guy who can be a lead ball handler next to him in Harden.
Yeah, Godlock has some limitations which make him a hard sell on 28 NBA teams, but the other two, he can do something. He's not going to be the long-term starter there, but as a guy who has a specific strength and you can mitigate his weaknesses, sure, why not?
Let's get to Ty Lawson now. Shams Charania reporting that he is in quote-unquote strong discussions on a possible deal with the Pacers. That's not quite as strong, I guess we should say, language as you'll often see in these tweets, which is that they are progressing or expected to or whatever, something like that. So we don't know that this is for sure. But you happen to like him for the Pacers.
Sure. Joe Young has some ability to eventually be a kind of a spark plug off the bench. I like him, but Lawson can do more. You know, he can be a guy who can really run it, and the Pacers need that player when George Hill is off the floor because they don't have it anywhere else on their roster. So there are a series of teams that, and I wrote about this a little bit on Twitter when the buyout was finalized, is that Lawson has a basic choice, and that's that he could go to a team that isn't very good, that has a clear need at point guard, and play more minutes, pad more stats, but then be done a little bit over a month from now. Or he could take a smaller role on a better team and play into the playoffs. And there isn't a right or a wrong answer there. But if you're going to go the second route, the Pacers, the Pistons, there are a couple other teams that just make sense.
The Pacers also, and this is noteworthy, can offer him their prorated room exception. So they could really offer him up to about a little under $2 million. And we'll see whether they actually do that or not. That could be kind of what the holdup in the negotiations is. I mean, it doesn't really cost the Pacers much other than money, but as a small market team, that's something they're a little concerned with. They use cap space. They don't have an incredibly high team salary this year. I do like him for them. I would have thought that there might be some other places that he could have gone. I mean, I think I would have really tried to get to somewhere like Philly if I were him, to really rebuild my value a little bit. He could not re-sign with Denver since he was traded this league year, and I don't know that they would necessarily want him back. Anyway, I don't really think that there is anywhere else that he would have been an amazing fit. Maybe in Milwaukee would have been a thought.
Brooklyn?
Or even, yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Brooklyn?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Brooklyn would have been a good one too, where he could just kind of get the ball in his hands and try to do stuff. But maybe those teams like Philly, Brooklyn that are out of it felt like he wasn't a great fit there. I mean, for me, and also I think maybe some of the other implications are these teams going to try to get him on a deal for next year as well? I don't think he would be willing to sign that. His idea is to rehab his value and then get, you know, a contract that's going to be a little bit more commensurate with what he initially would have been making next year. The Suns would have been another one, but I think they're just in full-on tank mode at this point. And the Blazers don't really need him. They've got CJ McCollum to run backup point.
I think today is the last time we'll need to say it for a little while, but this is why you never non-guarantee your previously guaranteed contract.
Yeah, unless it's with the Miami Heat, they'll make it up to you.
Yeah, you'll figure out a way to make it work there.
Another interesting little tidbit: Pau Gasol in a interview with Marca or Marca.com, I'm not sure, MARCA, in Spanish, but translated by a Hoops Hype, said that he will certainly consider the Bulls in free agency, and previously also made the comment that the basketball situation has to be right, although he loves the city. The basketball situation in Chicago is not looking very good lately. There's been just a lot of angst out of Chicago, as they have the third worst defensive rating in the league since February 1st. Amazing how that happens when all of your good defensive players get injured. And Powell also had an interesting statement that he wants the team to value his performance. And to me, that means that he's going to kind of be pseudo-guaranteed a starting role, as he seems to have been in his time here. I'm very adamant, though, that the Bulls absolutely must move on from him if they are going to be any good next year.
They have to have a better defensive center. It might be hard to find the right guy, but Gasol doesn't make sense with what they're doing, you know, with their timeline, with anything like that, and especially if he wants a starting role. I guess maybe you could play him with Taj another season, but Mirotić, Portis, those kind of guys, I don't love the fit with any of them, and I, of course, with the overall arc of the franchise. So if that's what he wants, then you say best wishes and hope you sign somewhere else, unless he wants to sign a really discounted contract, which it doesn't sound like he wants to do.
The Bulls, now, if you really look at their roster, I don't think their defense will be this bad once Butler comes back. But, you know, there's generally a reason why they've been so awful on defense ever since Noah got injured, right? Derrick Rose, you'd say maybe he's an average defensive point guard at this point. Butler is still, you know, real good on the wing, although his performance has declined a little bit defensively since he kind of became more this star. Doug McDermott, pretty bad. Nikola Mirotic, maybe overrated how bad he is, but certainly not a plus defensive player. You know, doesn't really play with any kind of force defensively. Mike Dunleavy will execute the system, but again, not someone who's going to play with a lot of force. The problem with Gasol is you cannot play him defensively with Mirotic, and certainly not with McDermott. Like, those three guys at the same time, I think McDermott and Mirotic are the guys that this team should be starting at the 3 and 4 going forward. McDermott is on a very nice run offensively, at least. And so just for fit with the rest of the roster, you have to have someone who's a good defensive center, someone like what Noah used to be, or maybe even still is, although all the reporting seems to indicate that he's just about done in Chicago. He's not interested in coming back there. And if Gasol stays, I can think of no reason why he would want to. And so if you play Gasol to start, they wisely went with Taj Gibson as the other starter because they needed some defense, but Taj Gibson really drags down your offense. So you think of Gasol, yeah, he's a better offensive center than most still with his shooting and his passing, but when you consider that you now have to play a traditional power forward who can defend next to him, he actually is hurting the offense as well for that reason. So just the fit now at this point is so bad that they have to move on from him, or they just have to get some guys who are a lot better defensively than Mirotic and McDermott, and those are the kind of cheap guys that they are relying on. And the Bulls should be able to get that player. They should be able to get to $20-25 million in cap space and get someone who's a pretty good defensive center. They would actually be, I think, a good destination if the Warriors were to move on from Andrew Bogut to just take Bogut into their cap space. I think he would be a pretty good fit there. Someone of that ilk. But yeah, Gasol just, I think he's got to go, and it sounds like, though, that the Bulls are going to make him a significant offer, and I'm almost hoping that the Bulls just do terribly the rest of the season and miss the playoffs just so that Gasol will save them from themselves by deciding to move on to a team that looks like more of a contender.
Hooray, poisoning the well.
All right, is that all the news we got?
I think so.
Let's take a brief break to talk to you about SeatGeek, the inaugural sponsor of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. I spoke at the Stanford GSB Sports Innovation Conference yesterday. No surprise that they were there as well because they are one of the most innovative apps out there. SeatGeek is a great way to either buy or sell your tickets. There are no hidden fees whatsoever. You get all the prices up front. SeatGeek also is just incredibly easy. A couple of swipes and you are done. You've bought your ticket. It's an app. No need to enter any of those squiggly lines and try and figure it out and then hit the button where they ask you, listen to what the letters might be, and now you can input them. That's all done. SeatGeek also ranks every ticket based on value. They also give you a suggested selling price so you can sell your tickets quickly and easily. And they also pull all the tickets available on other sites into one place so you can save time and you never miss a deal. You can even set alerts for upcoming events, and SeatGeek will let you know if ticket prices fall. What's more, my listeners can get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So you can download that free SeatGeek app, go into the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter that promo code CAPSPACE, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download that app, enter promo code CAPSPACE today, and save on tickets to everything. All right, so what's our gimmick for today?
So the gimmick is something that I've pushed for a while now, and we're going to do a kind of a modified version of what I would do ideally, which is the idea is that you want to give a real reward for teams that finish with the best record or that finish high, and the way that you do that is by changing the playoff structure a little bit. And so the way we're doing it for this podcast is in the first round, the top four teams are what I would call protected teams. So they're separated. And then the number one team can choose among the bottom four. So the teams qualify in the same way. You can choose among the bottom four. And then the first team gets the pick of all four. Then second gets the three remaining and so on and so forth. So the way that we're doing this is we're kind of selecting what we think that the top eight is going to be, what each team's eight is going to be, and what the top four is going to be, and then I think we're going to do both who we would pick and who we think the other team would pick in those circumstances.
Yeah, so let's start with the West. Golden State, very likely to be the number one seed. And as I alluded to earlier, I think Memphis would be the very clear choice for them.
Sure. I think it'd be good to just tell people who the four teams are. So we're going with 538, so it would be Memphis, Dallas, Houston, and Portland. And the most fungible of those would be Houston and Utah would be the team that could jump in.
Yeah, at this point, Memphis has a 99% chance of the playoffs per 538. It's probably a little bit lower than that just because 538 doesn't know about their injury problems. The Mavericks at 86%. The Blazers now 98% after their recent run. They've had a very successful East Coast trip until they got blown out by the Celtics last night. And then you've got the Rockets 70%, the Jazz 40%. I mean, those two teams are kind of the teams that are fighting for that last seed. The Jazz have had some really disappointing losses lately. They lost to Brooklyn at home, even though Brooklyn has been playing a little better. They've actually won 5 out of 9. But man, that is that was a really, really bad loss for the Jazz. So I guess we'll consider that the Jazz are out of it for now and the Rockets are in, but maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, whether things would change or not with the Jazz at 40%. I think Memphis, clearly the weakest of all these teams. I mean, their bigs right now are Zach Randolph, Jermichael Green, Chris Anderson, and Jarrell Martin. I mean, they're probably going to play Matt Barnes a lot at the four. I mean, that, and those are their wings. Matt Barnes and Lance Stevenson, PJ Harrison, Tony Allen, Vince Carter, and then Mike Conley and Mario Chalmers. I mean, they basically have two guys on their team, Randolph and Conley, that I would consider to be above average players at this point.
Yeah, they're another example of why I think this format would be more fair, is that I personally believe that you give a greater reward to the top seed, teams will go in that direction, that it shouldn't just be random chance, and so the Warriors would be the beneficiaries.
Yeah, the counter-argument to that would be, hey, Memphis fought really hard all year, the regular season, you know, as much as you are valuing the regular season for the teams at the top and giving them an advantage, you are devaluing the regular season for the teams at the bottom. You can say this team fought hard all year. They're going to be the fifth seed or the sixth seed. They shouldn't have to have this impossible matchup with the Warriors. Even so, I happen to agree with you, though. I think that dominant regular season should be rewarded over, hey, you know, we got the sixth seed, hooray. You know, that if you get the number one seed, that should mean more than getting the sixth seed. So, and I think it's very clear to me. Actually, the rest of these teams, you know, there are all some pretty decent arguments about why they could cause problems for people in a playoff
season. Yeah, and also my system would eliminate that kind of seed tanking garbage that you see of a team looking at the matchups and saying, hey, if we lose this game, we can get a better opponent. That would never happen in this system.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some very famous elements of that, like Brooklyn tanking to get the Raptors in 2014 and then beating them. The most famous one was back when the playoff system was even more ridiculous in 2006 when the Clippers the Clippers tanked to get the Nuggets, who were a ridiculous three seed, having won the Northwest Division, and then managed to get into the second round pretty easily as a result of that. So, yeah, I mean, you see that kind of crap every year, and I would love for that to be eliminated and just see teams play hard until the end and have that kind of determine what the seeds are.
So if we take Warriors-Memphis out, that's the first choice. Then you're the San Antonio Spurs, and if we're not counting Utah, they're choosing between the Mavericks, the Rockets, and the Blazers, and that's a really hard choice.
Yeah, who'd you have for them picking there?
So if it were my decision, if I were RC Buford Popovich, I would probably choose the Rockets because they're so inconsistent, and I think that you just put Kawhi Leonard on James Harden and their offense is just going to stagnate. However, I do not believe that is who they would pick.
Interesting. I actually, were I them, would be more scared of the Rockets than the Mavs or the Blazers, because I think those Rockets and Blazers teams just have a higher ceiling, especially offensively. We have seen that it rarely happens. They're very inconsistent. I don't expect this to happen, but I think the Rockets clearly have a higher ceiling than the Mavs do defensively and offensively. Harden is a guy who could just go crazy. He's actually had some reasonable success against Leonard. The Rockets have beaten San Antonio this year in that Christmas game. They've traditionally actually played them pretty well in these last 2-3 years with these groups. They have some athleticism that would be difficult for San Antonio to deal with. Potentially, the Spurs are not a tremendously athletic team. And I think when you're trying to pick these teams, you know, as the higher seed, that you are better in the aggregate than these teams. So I want to pick the team that I see as kind of lower ceiling, lower variance, and that's Dallas. The counter argument that to that, though, is that in what might have been considered a similar situation 2 years ago, Dallas took San Antonio to seven games on the strength of some masterful coaching by Rick Carlisle.
You could make an argument, and I probably would, that Dallas gave them the best series of anybody the year they won the title.
Yeah, I think that that's probably correct. No, I mean, I would still say it was probably Oklahoma City, and Oklahoma City just struggled because of the Ibaka calf injury that year as well. But I would have, just because San Antonio destroyed Dallas so badly in that Game 7 at home, I don't think Oklahoma City would have necessarily lost like that if they had managed to beat San Antonio in that epic Game 6 in overtime in Oklahoma City. But this is not that same Dallas Mavericks team.
True.
Anyway. That team was much better to me than this year's.
So do you think that the Spurs would choose Dallas, or do you think they would choose somebody else?
I suspect that they would choose the Rockets. And I have little reason to think that, other than that I think that Pop would probably, and this is completely imputing my idea of like what Pop's thinks that I don't actually know, but just kind of based on his personality, I would guess that he would be more scared of like good, disciplined, well-coached team than a team like Houston that is just so inconsistent and just kind of, you know, makes a bunch of mistakes. I think he would feel like he could take advantage of that he would be able to out-coach J.B. Bickerstaff in a series. So I would pick Dallas, but I think they would pick the Rockets instead, or maybe the Blazers as well, because they're also a young team.
Yeah, I could see them picking the Blazers. Their strengths are obviously great, but they don't really have a ton outside of that. I think he could feel that they could take that away enough.
I mean, the Blazers are like, what, 17-5 since the start of the middle of January or something? I mean, I think like just neither of Dallas or the Rockets or the Jazz, for that matter, has had that kind of a run. And that's another thing for me where I'm like, all right, you know, this is a team that's shown that they can get to an incredible level. Like, they just destroyed Golden State at home, you know, so I don't want to take the chance. I want to just go with the team that, yeah, you know, they might be a little bit less inconsistent, but just has not shown that ability to just kill teams on occasion when they're really locked in.
Okay, let's move on to the Oklahoma City Thunder. We're gonna say that they're going to finish ahead of the Clippers, though that is less certain now than it was 24 hours ago.
Yeah, Oklahoma City 2-5 since the break with some real ugly losses. I think we can still think that they are going to be ahead. And by the way, score one for the projection systems, we talked about, oh, I thought that Oklahoma City was going to win 60 games, even though the projection systems kind of had them a little bit lower. And you're like, wow, how is Oklahoma City going to lose all these games? Well, they have a really hard schedule of late. You know, I mean, it's been their last games have been Golden State, then at Clippers, and now at Golden State tonight, which we're going to be at. So
on a back-to-back.
Yeah, those projection systems, you know, could be pretty darn accurate sometimes. So, I mean, for me, they have to pick between Rockets and Blazers. I think if Dallas were left, they would love to play against Dallas, a team that cannot defensive rebound to save their lives. And the Oklahoma City is the best offensive rebounding team in the league, I think. So that would be my pick if Dallas were still remaining. They also don't really have anyone to guard Russ. They, you know, Wes Matthews would be overmatched trying to guard KD. But between the Rockets and Blazers, if I were Oklahoma City, I would probably pick the Rockets, but it would still be a difficult choice for me just because of Harden.
I agree with you on the premise that if Dallas was available, that's an easy call for Oklahoma City just with their specific strengths. I would lean towards the Blazers just on the idea that I'm not sure. I feel that they would have a lot of trouble stopping Oklahoma City. You know, I think that defensively they would do that, and you could mitigate.
Hey, they're a better defense than the Rockets are.
Yeah, they are, but I think overall, when Dwight, you know, I think the idea that Dwight will play better in the playoffs than he has in regular season is a fair one. And
yeah, he's done that the last 2 years.
Exactly.
Sure.
So I think that, and again, when you're going on the idea of ceiling, I think Houston's ceiling is meaningfully higher than Portland's, especially when you consider Oklahoma City having just strong players at the one and the three. I also would, of course, be terrified of having Patrick Beverley guard Russell Westbrook for a series. Not for the he's so good argument, but for the just the scrappy Dellavedova element of it. It already has happened before. And, yeah, it's a tough call. Like, you know, you're sitting there, and Oklahoma City would be favored over both of those teams. I would lean Portland, but not very much.
Yeah, I think I would go with the Rockets. I just think the Blazers are just way better than the Rockets at this point.
That's true. Even though the Blazers, one of their few losses recently was to the Rockets at home.
Yeah, in a total fluke end-of-game situation.
It was weird.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, again, a very close call for me. If I had to guess what Oklahoma City would do, I think they would choose the Blazers because they probably would just be more scared of Harden. Yep. But yeah, I think I would go with and the Rockets also have Trevor Ariza, who I think could do a better job on Durant than a lot of guys could. Although I think the Blazers, Al-Farouq Aminu actually would be an excellent matchup against KD with the size that he has and his ability to challenge shots. So that's another thing to consider as well. And I think that just Oklahoma City really struggles if they're not going to switch everything to deal with more motion. There's the shooting of Lillard and McCollum, someone like Myers Leonard pulling the Oklahoma City center out of the lane. Ed Davis's pick and roll, the Blazers just have so much more of a multifaceted attack than the Rockets, who it's just, all right, it's going to be Harden, you know, we're going to kind of load up on him and maybe he'll do well and maybe he won't. So, yeah, and the Thunder also have Robertson, who I think can do a pretty good job at the point of attack on Harden. I would pick the Rockets. I think the Blazers are just a better team at this point. Maybe that'll change by the end of the year.
So if let's say the series were Warriors, Grizzlies, Spurs, Mavs, Rockets, Thunder, and Clippers, Blazers, which of those series would you, as a basketball fan, be most excited to see?
Oh, Clippers, Blazers, easily. I think the other three would be pretty miserable blowouts.
OKC Rockets would just not be fun. Like, there'd probably be one or two games that were close late, and you'd be watching.
Yeah, a lot of iso ball.
Ugly basketball. Clippers, Blazers would be fun. It'd be a good series.
Would any of this change? Like, where would you slot the Jazz in? I mean, just not talking about specific matchups here, but just when you're talking about Memphis, Dallas, Rockets, Blazers, if the Jazz were to make it, and that would assume that they would probably be playing a little bit better, kind of closer to the ceiling that we believed was possible for them this year, where would you slot them in order of preference among those teams?
I think the Spurs would be happy to play them, and that's just a terrible matchup for the Jazz. Like,
The Spurs have destroyed the Jazz this year.
And, like, the Jazz have these really nice strengths. Like, their front court is great. Oh, great, now you're playing Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Tim Duncan, and your strength is not a strength anymore.
Yeah, I still think that the Jazz can get their defense to a much higher level than any of these teams, and that could be a concern, potentially. But yeah, I mean, I think San Antonio would certainly choose Utah over Dallas. I'm not sure I would actually agree with that, frankly. I think that Utah can get to be at a pretty good level, but then they also really kind of don't have any playoff experience at all. I mean, you had guys like Gordon Hayward when they beat the Rockets in overtime at home last week talking about how this was like the biggest NBA game they'd ever played in like March, you know, so because they've just not really been in the playoff chase. And the one time they made the playoffs, I think in Hayward's career, when he was getting minutes, they just got waxed immediately by the Spurs in the first round.
Yeah.
Shall we shift to the Eastern Conference? This one is a lot harder to me.
Way harder. So I think we'll give the lay of the land first. So the top four, the protected quote unquote teams, would be Cleveland.
Yeah, and this is based on the projections right now.
So
the 538 projections.
So the protected teams would be Cleveland number one, Toronto number two, Boston number three, Miami.
Yeah, and those
four.
Three teams are very, very likely to finish in those places. The Celtics are significantly ahead of the rest of the teams.
Yeah, so those three, and then right now 538 has Miami as the fourth team. And then right now, that we'll go through kind of, I think, from 5 to 10, but so they have it as the Hornets, the Hawks, the Pacers, the Pistons, and then the teams just out, the Wizards and the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, the Bulls now down to a pretty miserable 29% chance of making the playoffs, although, you know, it'll probably help the Bulls a little bit when, you know, the top 15 player in the league, Jimmy Butler, comes back. The fact that they haven't had him for a month has kind of hurt a little bit.
Just
a I mean, and all this about, like, oh, the Bulls have no spirit, they have no coaching. Well, you realize they're missing four of their top seven players, right? Like, Noah is out, Mirotić, Butler, and who am I forgetting?
Taj Gibson's out right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he's out, but that's not who I'm thinking of. Anyway, whatever. They're really injured.
Yeah, and also and, those are the players that give them so much of their identity and the ways that they actually beat opponents. You know, like Rose is surviving. He's getting better, closer to that, but it's not like Derrick Rose isn't carrying you to wins. Jimmy Butler is.
Yeah, yeah, and Gibson is just out with like a what sounds like a smaller hamstring injury.
Right.
So Cavaliers, if we assume that the we're picking from Hornets, Hawks, Pacers, and Pistons, who are you picking if you're the Cavs?
This took me a while. I was sitting there, and there are arguments for and against really all these teams, but it really eventually it separated into two groups. So I had the Hornets and the Pacers as being the more challenging teams for them. So then I was deciding between the Pistons and the Hawks, and I ended up going with Atlanta because I feel like Cleveland, like they don't really have a guy to defend LeBron James. They don't really have a guy to defend Kyrie Irving. And while the Hawks, you know, have a great front court, I don't think that is going to work as well in a 7-game series against Cleveland.
The Cavs also destroyed the Hawks on the offensive glass last year. That was without Kevin Love. Now, this year, I think it would be even worse. The Hawks are actually even worse at defensive rebounding this year than they were last year. And the Hawks just in general are even worse. They don't have Damari Carroll anymore to defend LeBron. They don't really have anyone with any kind of heft at all. I mean, they probably would have to go with Millsap on LeBron, but if you're doing that with the starters, now you've got Kevin Love being guarded by a wing. You know, that's not really going to work that well either. So, I think the Hawks are a miserable matchup for the Cavs. The Cavs have shown the ability to just switch on them, defend what was a much better Hawks team at that point, even though they kind of fell off due to some injuries of their own. I think the Hawks would definitely be my pick, especially when you consider that the Pistons have kind of ground the game down. They've actually beaten the Cavs twice this year.
Yeah, including once after they made the trades they did at the deadline.
Why wouldn't you have picked the Pacers or Hornets?
I think they're better in terms of facing Cleveland.
Yeah.
They have individual defenders that I think are more dangerous. They have I think they have a little bit more versatile kind of offensive creators in that way. And I think they're better teams right now.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the Pacers would be really interesting. Paul George to defend LeBron. I mean, that's probably the number one reason you want to stay away from the Pacers right there.
And George Hill on Kyrie.
Yeah, that would be pretty good.
That's
too.
A series I want to see, but it doesn't have to be a first round series.
Yeah, and another thing too is that the Pacers, if they're going to be starting Turner and Mahimi together, a lineup that's had some success until recently. I think it's kind of dropped off a little bit. They lost at home to the Blazers, and I think they got beat by somebody else recently too. I can't remember, but still, those two rim protectors, when you have guys like Kyrie and LeBron who want to finish at the rim, that would be really helpful, especially when Kevin Love goes out of the game. You know, that would be a great matchup to watch, is whether Love's shooting or that sort of just interior size of Turner and Mahimi would end up kind of winning the battle there. I would love to see that series. And the Pacers, at least in the playoffs, usually have a pretty good home crowd as well. All right, so the Hawks are off the board. We both agree on that. The Raptors now are deciding between Pistons, Pacers, and Hornets.
This is an easier call. It separates in kind of the same way for me with the Hornets and the Pacers and the Pistons. However, I would be a little bit scared of KCP's defense on point guards against Lowry, because I think Lowry is such an important part of what makes them
work. Yeah, but then who's going to guard DeRozan?
Right. That's why I ended up going that way.
And Reggie Jackson is pretty bad defensively. They would have to hide him somewhere. Maybe they would hide him on like Terrence Ross or something. Also, I think some of it depends too for the Raptors on whether you had Damari Carroll back or not. I do think that with the Pistons shooting at power forward, if they're going to start Luis Scola, and Zach Lowe has been kind of banging this drum, that starting lineup with Scola and Valanciunas has just been getting smacked all year, and that Dwayne Casey may have to consider making a change there, and that maybe they will once Carroll returns. But someone like Tobias Harris, or even Marcus Morris being guarded by Luis Scola, that would be a matchup in favor of the Pistons. But I think they at least are going to get Carroll back at something that, you know, even if it's not 100%, would be enough that he can at least kind of guard those guys a little
bit. Yeah, and I'd be more scared of Paul George and Batum than I would be of the forwards for the Pistons.
All right, so Celtics, you have to pick between Pacers and Hornets.
I would take Charlotte, and the reason for that is that I think that Boston's ability to take away offensively capable guards. They have so many guys that can do that. They can handle a lot of that. And the Pacers have a much higher ceiling with their front court. We could talk about their floors maybe being pretty similar, but I would be more scared of the Turner Mahinmi thing with Boston, the way Boston's offense works, than anyone else.
You know, I had the Celtics picking the Pacers. I think the Hornets have been a little bit better over the course of the year than the Pacers. But I think you convinced me, and I think the Pacers just have more talent than the Hornets do overall in a playoff situation where you can play George, you can play George Hill way more minutes. I think I probably ultimately would go with the Hornets. I think also that the Celtics are very comfortable playing small, which is what you would want to do against the Hornets, and that also a team that doesn't have much rim protection would be great for Isaiah Thomas getting into the lane and scoring. I think that would actually be a very fun aesthetic series, Celtics-Hornets, teams that move the ball, have shooting at the big positions, and would be really enjoyable. Hornets do have played really, really well at home this year. I'd be a little bit worried about their home court advantage, especially for a team that has had tasted so little success and has a fan base that just really wants to succeed so badly, whereas this is sort of like, you know, a Pacers season that is not nearly as sexy as some of the ones that they've had earlier in the decade. But yeah, ultimately, I think I would go Hornets. I'll switch that around, and then that would leave Heat Pacers, which I think would also be a really awesome series.
Yeah, that would be, I think you could put those, you know, these kind of four teams together in any alignment, and it would be interesting, but I think this split would be, like, Heat Pacers would just be a crazy series, and what I knew was, one of the tenets of my kind of stand with this is also that it would extend into further rounds. And so my question for you is this. If Cleveland is...
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, we didn't even think about kind of the game theory of like, all right, if we pick this team, then... I mean, I guess you just assume that if a team's picking its opponents, like the higher seed is going to win anyway. Though, right.
But the question to
especially
you,
in the West.
The question to you is this. If you're Cleveland, so Toronto, let's say they make it and they're protected. If it's Celtics and Heat, let's say it's those two, but we can talk about some of the other permutations. Which of those teams would you rather play in the second round?
Oh, I would much rather play the Heat than the Celtics, unless Bosch were out. If Bosch were out, or if Bosch were in, I misspoke there. If Bosch were in, I mean, I think it's probably a fair assumption that he's not going to be back this year. We haven't really heard anything to the contrary on that, despite the fact there hasn't been an official announcement. Yeah, I would much rather play the Heat instead of the Celtics. The Celtics have just been better all year.
Would either the Hornets or Pacers beating the Heat change that for you?
No, I don't think so.
I'd consider taking the Celtics over the Pacers, but it would depend on how they played in the first round.
Yeah. So the Wizards and Bulls are the two teams kind of on the outs right now. The Wizards actually are up to 50% chance of making the playoffs now per 538. I think the Bulls, too, you know, that 29% probably undersells them. Butler, although it sounds like Butler, yeah, he might be back within the next, you know, week or so, it seems like, and that could really change a lot for this Bulls team, and then Mirotić potentially coming back as well. Do the Wizards or Bulls scare you particularly more than any of these other bottom five teams or bottom four teams?
They scare me more than the Hawks, but the Hawks wouldn't replace them. You know, they'd be replacing one of the other teams. I would have them below, each of them below the Pacers and the Hornets, but probably above the other two teams.
Yeah, this is another one of those questions. If the Bulls had Noah still, or if he was like coming back, I actually would be pretty darn scared of the Bulls. But I think just there's no way that they're going to defend well enough to really be a problem. For anybody, they've just been so bad.
But if, like, imagine if the Cavs didn't take them, if the Cavs took the Hawks, and then you're sitting there as the Raptors, and you're choosing between the Bulls, the Pacers, and the Hornets, considering the history.
Yeah, and you have to imagine that if the Bulls do make it in at this point, again, just like we talked about with the Jazz, that they will have begun playing a lot better, the pieces will have started meshing back together again. What about the Wizards? Allen Anderson has been playing well finally since he came back, which is great for him that he actually didn't miss a beat. I mean, you'd think a guy missed the whole year with ankle surgery wouldn't be able to contribute, but he has been so far, giving them another kind of small ball option, two-way guy on the wing. They have Markieff Morris now. Do they scare you more than, I mean, I think they probably would scare me more than like the Pistons.
Sure. I would agree. I think
especially
they,
with
if they
the
make
Pistons
it in,
being so inexperienced.
If they make it in, I would put them below the Pacers and Hornets, but I would probably still have them above the Hawks and Pistons.
Yeah. I mean, John Wall is probably a better player than anyone on those teams except for Paul George on the Pacers.
Yeah.
And Brad Beal, also, you got to remember, he'll probably start playing more minutes again if it's the playoffs. He's been coming off the bench. They've been starting Garrett Temple, who hasn't been any good. Maybe Anderson even could help get Temple out of the rotation as well. Markieff could provide a scoring element off the bench, though he still hasn't really played very well for them yet. But I think that, yeah, the Wizards, you know, some of this is probably just anchoring because I predicted them to be the number one seed in the East like a moron at the beginning of the year, thinking that the Cavs would be too injured to win a bunch of games. But, yeah, I would be pretty scared of this Wizards team. I think they can get to a level defensively that's higher, really, than any of these other teams have shown if they get the right personnel out there. And they've won playoff series 2 years in a row. This is actually a pretty battle-tested playoff team, as amazing as it is to say.
Cavs Wizards and Raptors Wizards would both be wild series. I could see the Wizards taking at least a couple of games from either of them.
Yeah, maybe. The one thing about the Wizards, they don't really have much of a home court advantage compared to some of these other teams. For whatever reason, that's never really been particularly a big part of
because DC is a city of transplants, so they're not they don't identify with the team in the way that like Boston fans do or Indianapolis fans or, you know, a lot of these other cities. Cleveland is another example of that, like, that it's a very different feel. I covered games in Washington for years. It's a very different thing.
All right, we got to go. Do you want to talk about how you stole my podcast idea?
How I stole the idea by doing it before? I had Arturo Galletti from Who Does Basketball Numbers. I had him on before the season, and we talked about the Vegas over-unders, and then we had arranged and recorded last night to evaluate that, and Nate and I will do that at a later date. So the Eastern
I was like, oh, should we come up with an idea for the show? And I was, oh, how about we like go back and check out those preseason over-unders and see how they're doing and why they're different. He's like, oh, you mean the podcast that I'm about to record tonight with Arturo? I'm like,
So we'll do that in the future. And then just to...
By the way, we're all ripping off of Bill Simmons on this one anyway,
of course,
to be sure.
And so to plug other things, so that Eastern Conference part will come out today, will come out on Thursday, and then the West will be at some point in the future. We already recorded it, but I don't want to put them out back to back. And then I also wrote a piece about Kevin Durant, my CBA muse, for the Sporting News about why I think he should take the 1+1 with the Thunder. And then I have a Warriors World piece on Harrison Barnes that will come out on Thursday as well.
Yeah, Harrison Barnes has not been good lately at all for the Warriors. Really, I thought a very disappointing effort from him with Steph and Andre Iguodala being out on Tuesday.
Great.
So, all right, yeah, we'll be back. Hopefully this Warriors-Thunder game will be such a classic that we have to record another emergency podcast about it, but I'm not counting on that.
Yeah, I'll be open to be up till 3 a.m. again, but we'll see.
All right, man, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much for listening. Give us an iTunes review or rating. Always really appreciated. Definitely something that I can cite to when we're looking for sponsors for the show. And, of course, use that SeatGeek code, which is CapSpace. Talk to you next time.